eats couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Ryan Gallagher, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. As if you can tell, it's not Neil Miller who is on the phone here, or on the line here. We've got Ryan Gallagher from Criterion Cast as our special guest this week, because Neil just couldn't deal with me. There's too much, way too much awesomeness in this magical studio in the sky. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a blast.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about Criterion Cast, because you were on Fat Guy's Second Reel quite a few months ago, but you haven't been on Fat Guy's proper, I guess. So tell me where you come from. Tell the audience. I know where you come from, but tell the audience.
Well, basically, we are doing a weekly podcast dedicated to the Criterion Collection, which is a kind of like a highbrow DVD Blu-ray distribution company. So each week we go through the Criterion Collection. They have a catalog of over 500 movies, and each week we pick one of them to talk about in depth and talk about news and new releases. And we end up talking about news regarding a lot of like home video technology and kind of where the future of home media is headed towards. And we have a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah, I've been on the show a couple times. You were kind enough to have me there.
Well, it was a blast having you on.
Increased my street credibility. Because as you can tell, we're already, this episode has already, you know, raised our artistic merit so much by actually having, you know, I'm like, whoa, this is way too, you know, sophisticated.
Oh, no. I mean, like, well, we try to keep it, you know, like highbrow, but inevitably we talk about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or, you know, yes, some other highbrow entertainment from, you know, outside of the Criterion Collection.
Of course. Well, welcome to the show. Tell everybody how to get a hold of you first.
You can find our website and podcast at CriterionCast.com or follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/CriterionCast, and I'm Broken Cosmos on Twitter.
Yes. And if you want to get in touch with the show, our show, it's FatGuysAtTheMovies.com. You can catch us on iTunes. Just search Fat Guys at the Movies. You can email us at FatGuys@FilmSchoolRejects.com, or you can get us a voicemail, which we won't have right now because Neil bailed on me. No, I'm just, Neil just wasn't able to make the... I think it's because he hadn't seen anything, and he's just embarrassed. But if you want to give us a call maybe for next week or the week after, 614-388-8735. So there you go. That's how you get a hold of us. This week is, Ryan, you went to Comic-Con.
Yeah, right? I did. I just got back yesterday. Had a blast down there. It was, you know, pretty nice weather in San Diego, a little overcast, but it, you know, lessened the sunburns waiting in line for Hall H.
How many times did it wrap around the building?
You know, they've actually managed to squeeze as many people into that little grassy area right outside of Hall H. The little grassy knoll where they've managed to somehow loop it around enough to where they can fit more people than they can actually fit into the hall on that little grassy area, which makes for it a little bit hard to gauge whether or not you're going to get into the hall to actually watch some of these panels where they talk about all the movies. You know, it seems like a lot of people mention now that Hollywood has kind of taken over Comic-Con. They pretty much have just taken over Hall H, and I don't think it ruins Comic-Con, but it definitely makes it an interesting mix of people that come there.
That's true. Well, and were you at all involved? You weren't the guy stabbing anybody.
I did not stab anyone, despite being, you know, squeezed between people. And that I'm a little claustrophobic at times. That was a little crazy, but, you know, it wasn't. I think people are blowing it out of proportion. It wasn't that bad, although, you know, they did take a guy out in handcuffs with blood all over his shirt, so you know, take that for what you will.
My favorite part about that story was it's like a guy in a Harry Potter shirt stabs another guy in the face, and you're like, what was he wearing? Was he wearing a Flash shirt? I mean, come on, Green Lantern.
And then in a room of superheroes, nobody stepped up to stop the guy.
That's the best part. Everyone wants to be Superman, and nobody was like, oh, look, there's injustice happening in the back of the room.
I think really what it was is that nobody wanted to get hauled out in handcuffs because they stepped in and also became part of the fight. So, you know, there's a little bit of, you know, rationalization going on there.
Were you in the room when that happened?
Yeah, I was. It kind of stopped all of the events in Hall H, but it also made everything that came afterwards a little bit sweeter because you had been waiting an extra hour for things to go on. So when we got to see the, you know, the Marvel stuff with Thor and Captain America and the Avengers, all that stuff, everyone was a lot more excited for because they had been sitting in that room for an hour with nothing going on.
That's funny. Yeah. And because the thing is, this is one I've never been in Hall H. I don't do Hall H, even when I go to Comic-Con. Because when I went there in 2007 and 2008 to cover it for Film School Rejects, I just did, I did interviews and panels and stuff like that, smaller ones. I can't handle Hall H because you have to get there at like 5 a.m. It's like a concert. You have to get there so early and then you can't leave.
Yeah, and you have to get there even earlier now. I mean, people were getting there at like 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock in the morning for panels that would be at 11:45 or noon, and you still couldn't get in. Like, even though you're getting there 3 hours earlier, you might not get a seat in a hall that fits, you know, over 6,000 people.
Yeah, and you have to wear Depends because you know they don't have like outhouses in the room or anything like that.
Well, they do have a bathroom in there, but you know it's a long line of people waiting for the bathroom at the end of each panel.
Wow. Yeah, just let yourself dehydrate and don't drink any water. Well, we'll talk a little more about Comic-Con in the middle segment. We got to get to the reviews, which I was last minute asking you, of course, to do this show, so you haven't had a chance to see any of these.
I haven't seen any of these, although I'm kind of interested in a couple of them. So it should be. I mean, like, I can definitely say that I'm interested in this Dinner for Schmucks movie.
Well, we'll start with a different one, just, you know, to throw you off.
Oh, yeah.
And this is Cats and Dogs, The Revenge of Kitty Galore, which is my personal favorite title of any movie.
Now,
because if you know anything about why they named this, it's just funny.
Now, did you see is there a first Cats and Dogs movie? And is Kitty Galore a part of that as well?
No. Kitty Galore is nowhere near the first movie. So I don't know what she's revenging about because it was like Mr. Fluffy Pants, voiced by Sean Hayes. Fozzie Bear, when he was on the show one of his podcasts, he declared that Cats and Dogs, The Revenge of Kitty Galore is probably the gayest movie of the summer. Because, you know, it's got Bette Midler and Sean Hayes and James Marsden, all these people in it, and the name. So, but it's computer-generated cats and dogs work together for the first time to bring down the dastardly villain Kitty Galore in 3D.
Agent 127 breaking radio silence. I have spotted Kitty Galore.
Your mission will be revealed at HQ. The squirrel will self-destruct. But first, a little dance.
I will enslave all mankind.
Someone's having a bad hair day.
Cats and dogs will have to work together.
Am I the only one who thinks this is a bad idea?
Now, how was the 3D? Was it amazing? Did the cats and dogs fly out of the screen?
Well, you know what's funny is I didn't think the 3D was as good as other shot for 3D movies. I mean, it was better than like the conversion 3Ds. But you know, like something like G-Force, that's probably the best element that you can compare to G-Force last year. So, I mean, it had all the stuff flying at you and the dogs. I didn't think it didn't live up to the quality of G-Force. I thought G-Force was cute. This one, it was more along the lines of Underdog in 3D. Yeah. If you saw Underdog about 5 years ago, it was cute. And I mean, I've seen it lives up to the original because the original was okay. You know, so it has the special effects, it has the sniffing the butt jokes, you know, it has talking animals and it has annoying voices in it. I think just sort of like the one-off liners aren't that good. And it has this weird side story with Chris O'Donnell trying to find his dog because he loses him. But I took my kids and they loved it, and that's really who this movie's for.
Yeah.
So my final verdict is it kind of sucks.
And we're back. Well, you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. I'm Ryan Gallagher, and joining me tonight is Kevin Carr.
I'm joining you. You were going to say welcome back to Criterion Cast, weren't you?
I don't know what I was going to say. This is my first time doing a professional radio show, so I'm just flying by the seat of my pants right now.
That is how we do it every week here on Fat Guys at the Movies. That's the great secret, the great equalizer, seats of pants. So anyways... Shall we move on to the next reviews?
Yes, let's. A movie that I'm actually kind of interested to see just because of the cast, basically.
Yeah, Dinner for Schmucks. Paul Rudd plays an up-and-coming executive who finds a weird man, played by Steve Carell, so he can bring him to a business dinner and make fun of him.
I host a dinner once a month.
We can do Saturday.
It's not really a girlfriend type thing.
You invite idiots to dinner and make fun of them?
Okay, that is messed up.
I know.
So you told them you're not going?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely.
Are you okay?
Yeah!
In the words of John Lennon, you may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not.
The only one.
The only what?
That's the lyric. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one.
I don't think so, Tim.
Now, you said you're interested in seeing this. Is it just because of Carell and Rudd and Zach Galifianakis? And
yeah, I mean, it basically, and in reading about this movie, I saw that it's based on a French film from 98, and
yeah.
I'm really interested to see both of these now. I think that it's a really interesting concept, and you know, a lot of movies now try to shy away from making fun of people, and I like the idea that this movie just goes for it.
you're like let's make fun of people.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like such a politically incorrect concept for a movie that it's like, okay, this sounds good.
Yeah Well, you know what, here it's good you point out that it's based on a French film, because I haven't seen it, and I'm actually curious to see what they do with the French film, because as anyone knows, French cinema and American cinema are very different. Any genre you take, it's going to be different. It's very different with sort of conventions and that sort of thing, and it does not feel necessarily like a European film. Like, sometimes you'll see a movie and it's a remake,
yeah,
and it'd be like, I can totally see where this was originally a French or Dutch film or something. Like, I watched Insomnia, Chris Nolan's Insomnia.
Yep.
You can say, this feels like a European movie, you know? I don't think I got that much for Dinner for Schmucks feels like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. That's the best way I can describe it, where you've got...
Like, it's going back to those 80s comedies.
Yeah, well, more that it's you have this, or What About Bob, where you have the one, yeah, the straight-laced guy, and because the dinner doesn't happen till way at the end. I mean, most of the movie is just Paul Rudd and Steve Carell just dealing with each other, and it's just Steve Carell being a tornado of destruction to his life, and Paul Rudd just being the straight guy for the whole thing, which Paul Rudd's done the straight guy before, you know, did it in I Love You Man, he did it in Role Models, so I'd like to see him, I would like to see eventually him do more Brian Fantana from Anchorman,
yeah,
type movies. So
it also seems like Steve Carell is playing a less realistic, maybe a little wackier character than he usually does. I mean, he usually seems pretty wacky in all of his roles, but he's usually grounded in some reality. This one seems like he's pushing that limit a little bit.
He's a little more over the top in this one. Whereas, yeah, like you said, like when he plays, like, you know, Michael Scott in The Office, that he plays versions of Michael Scott all over the place. But I've known people like Michael Scott that
aren't
they're not very far away from that. Whereas, of course, I can't say I've known people that are like him in Dinner for Schmucks as well, but it does rely on that awkward humor, and I can't say I didn't laugh. There were parts of it that I thought were very funny, and it's all because of what Carell does with the material and what Rudd does as a very generous actor, letting him do it, you know, and that's just as important.
Yeah.
Again, going back to Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, Steve Martin letting John Candy be insane is part of what made that movie work. But with that said, it wasn't fantastic. I mean, it didn't seem terribly original. It kind of gets corny at times. And, you know, there are parts that are rough. It's not quite smoothed out correctly. But, boy, when you got Carell just being an idiot. And part of it, there are lines where you're like, wow, it's all about how he delivers the line.
Yeah.
And anyone else, it could have just sucked. But he did a great job with it. And Zach Galifianakis is fantastic in it. Jeff Dunham, not so much.
You think this will be the winner of the weekend?
You know, this one has a good shot. We'll talk about the box office predictions in a little bit. But you know, I think this one definitely, it's going to connect with audience. I think it's very mainstream. I mean, it's not going to be like The Hangover kind of runaway hit of the summer, but I do think it's going to do well. I'm going to give it a kind of rocks.
Is it a family feel good movie?
I wouldn't bring kids to it. I bring my kid. I bring my son Liam to a lot of movies. He's 9. And I accidentally brought him Stepbrothers 2 years ago when he was 7. Did not know it was rated R. Cause all the trailers didn't look like it was rated R from the trailers. I don't, pay attention to movie marketing. It's not like it's my job or anything.
No, and they in that movie they definitely push the R.
Yeah, it's, there were a couple times where I just leaned over to them. I'm like, they're saying a lot of things you're not allowed to say, buddy, because I couldn't leave. But this one's just, there's a lot of sexual humor to it, and it would be inappropriate for younger kids. So not that didn't stop people from bringing kids, you know, and plus there's stuff I don't think kids would understand. You have to know adults that are insane to really fully.
You have to have that context.
Yeah. You have to know people like, you have to know some schmucks in your life.
But do you think that the schmucks come out on top in the end? Do the good guys? I don't know if it's a spoiler, but like, do the good guys win? I mean, the trailers are kind of hinting at some of that, like the idea that, well, you know, these bad guys who make fun of people, they're gonna lose in the end. But
I don't want to spoil anything. But there are some corny moments. Let's just put it that way. it's sort of like the corniness is. I mean, like. Again, going back to Planes, Trains, and Automobiles really handled its corniness with finesse. And it was a beautiful film. And it was one of those that was a very touching film. This one, that's where the awkwardness really comes in. And you kind of feel like the movie's kind of schmucky at some points.
Do you think this is a comedy that's going to end up doing really well on DVD where people get around and watch it together late at night and nerd out over it?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't see it becoming like Anchorman.
Yeah,
you know, not something like that. It's not outrageous enough for that, but I think it's kind of like Grown Ups. Mm-hmm. It was a better movie than Grown Ups, but it's that same kind of thing where you're like, it could have been better, but it's still, I didn't hate my experience.
Do you think that there maybe an unrated funnier cut might see its way onto DVD?
Oh, I'd love to see an unrated funnier cut. I think because there's parts where I'm like, they could have really gone. They could have taken it way further, but you can tell that they were preserving the there's a scene in there. Like, there's a part in there where there's a guy, and he's got a ring on his finger. And he holds up his fingers like, this is my – he makes some crass jokes about his finger, but it's his index finger. Mm-hmm. Whereas I'm like, I could have – I bet you this was written with it being the middle finger. Because he's there showing this ring to everybody, and I could see where the original idea came from, and how they were like, yeah, we need to make this PG-13. So, maybe, who knows? But yeah, so for me it's a kind of rocks. But let's move to the next one. And this is Charlie St. Cloud. Zac Efron puts away his dancing shoes and basketballs to play a teenager ready for college who continues a relationship with his dead brother.
I pulled an extra shift. You are on SAM duty.
I'll make a deal with you. I'll practice with you every day up until I leave for Stanford.
Just can't wait, can you?
I'm not gonna ditch you.
Dad said.
But I'm not dead. That's my brother, SAM!
Charlie?
If you want to drop the glove in now.
I can't.
You're late. I thought we had a deal.
We do have a deal.
Promise?
Do you know anything about this movie?
You know, I actually saw this trailer for the first time at Comic-Con, believe it or not. Like,
Comic-Con?
I know. For some reason, they decided they had a trailer park in Hall H, kind of in between, or before the stabbing, but they also showed it again after the stabbing, where they showed
this
trailer.
Stabbing padding.
Exactly. For some reason, they thought a dead brother would be, maybe it's the more fantastical elements that this movie tries to play up.
Yeah.
You know, is he really talking to his dead brother? Is his dead brother all in his head? Who knows?
Or it was Universal said, we're talking about Scott Pilgrim enough, we got to put another one of our movies up there.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, I've never seen any of Zac Efron's movies. I've somehow managed to stay away from all of the High School Musical movies, and then I didn't get to see the Orson Welles movie that he did. I'm fascinated with the backlash towards him from some people who inevitably backlash against anyone that they think is, you know, prettier than them.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm in that boat too. I just don't know. This movie seems like he's growing up, at least from what I can tell in the trailer. It seems like he's trying to take himself seriously, or trying to take acting seriously, and that he's not, you know, just doing High School Musical 9 or whatever else they might be throwing at him. But he's trying to, like, push the limits of his acting abilities. And it seems like it looked from the trailer like he gets pretty emotional in this movie. It seems pretty sappy. I don't see myself wanting to go buy tickets for this, but, you know, it seemed like from what I could tell from reading people on Twitter that I respect, they didn't hate this movie, even though this has like a 10% or 10% on Rotten Tomatoes right now, 13%. It's not looking good for it.
Yeah. I don't know. They didn't screen it for us, which is never a good sign. But, I mean, it looks like he's trying to win his Oscar. Who knows? So I'm going to give it a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it for me. So, but we'll see. Maybe this weekend I'll see it. We got to go to a break, though.
Miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
Oh yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We've got Ryan Gallagher from Criterion Cast continuing talk. I'm going to say a little bit more about Charlie St. Cloud since we ran out of time in the last segment. I do like the fact that Zac Efron's actually trying to act.
Yeah, I do too. I think that people probably crap on him for those High School Musical movies. I think he has the potential to be a great young actor right now.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, I think when High School Musical gets crapped on, just like Hannah Montana gets crapped on and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of hatred out there for stuff that's made for the Disney audience, even though, it's made for an audience. It's just not the fanboy audience.
Right. Now we had those movies growing up as well. I mean, every generation has those Disney movies that are directed towards them.
Yeah. And what I think, one of the backlashes, I think he's one of those people, one of those actors who is almost reticent to come out of his wheelhouse because he's done the High School Musical movies. And then what was his big, his silver screen debut? Hairspray. And you're just like, well, he's dancing and singing again. So that's not really... He's not doing anything different. And then he did 17 again, where he literally starts the movie playing basketball and dancing. And I'm like, yeah, he needs to just do something totally different. So this is his chance. But I do get a real Nicholas Sparks feel from the trailer.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that's what.
And there's, I mean, it has a kind of solid cast. I mean, it has Kim Basinger and Ray Liotta in it. And I like both of them.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see. It might be. I might check it out on Thursday night at midnight. Because they are actually having midnight showings. Last week they had a midnight showing of Ramona and Beezus. I saw that. So it wasn't a bad movie.
And are there lots of kids in those screenings?
You know what's funny is I went. There were six other people in the screening, and there were like three of them were looked like they were high school girls who had read the, or maybe they may have been younger, but you know, like 16 looking year old girls, and they probably read the books when they were kids. Younger, and then there was a white trash family with their obnoxious daughter seeing the movie.
Now I'm not sure do you have a policy for your own kids as far as midnight screenings go. Do they want to go to them? Do you have to fight? Do you have to debate with your wife as far as like which movies they can go see at midnight, or is it a school night during the summer? Is it okay? Stuff like that.
I'm a completely irresponsible parent when it comes to midnight movies because I'll try and take my kids to anything. Well, like I took my oldest son, and he was at the time he was 8. I took him to see Wolfman at midnight because I'm like it's Wolfman. So what, he eats a liver, big deal. You know, it's not like they have the giant. You know, it's not like they have the graphic rape scene in the middle of the movie. Right. The things I worry about most with my kids are the sexual violence, drug use, and any sort of Santa Claus spoilers. Which can show up in movies and you have no idea that they're showing up. Like if you've seen Four Christmases, they just like drop that bomb right in the middle of the movie. And it was when I saw, I didn't take him to see that. Because I'm like, you know what? I'm PG-13 Christmas movie. You have that danger, you know?
Yeah.
So, and it was funny cause I was looking around, there were people who had like 10-year-old kids there and I'm like, yeah, you got a nice conversation on the way home. They did the same thing with grown-ups. They have a Tooth Fairy spoiler and grown-ups.
So you need the MPAA to, you know, add a new line in all of their disclaimers as far as the ratings go. So when they talk about, you know, smoking or male rear nudity, they need to include fictional character spoilers.
Exactly. They should. They really should. I mean, that's one thing they should add. If they're going to be doing, it'll be like graphic nudity, which means junk. That means a guy's penis. When it says graphic nudity, it just means some guy's dick's going to be on screen. You know that. So they should say, you know, hey, Santa Claus spoilers or something like that. You know, fairy tale.
Well, they would have to word it in such a way to where the kids reading the, you know, disclaimers underneath the rating will not understand, might not get what they're referring to, but an adult would.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's necessary for an R-rated movie. I mean, if they're going to be like The Last House on the Left, graphic rape, and Santa Claus spoiler, I don't think that they need to differentiate.
Although that might make me want to go see those movies if I didn't want to see it, and then suddenly it's like, and it's, you know, graphic rape plus Santa Claus spoilers. I'd be like, well, how do they squeeze that in there?
It'd be like if you seen Irreversible with this like 9-minute rape scene in the middle with Monica Bellucci, and then at the end he beats her up with just pummels her face, and then he goes, Santa Claus isn't real. And be like, oh, my 5-year-old is now all upset. No.
Or suddenly in, you know, Antichrist, there's the Easter Bunny's not real either.
Yes, there we go. Yeah, that's right. Just to make it even worse. No, but I take my kids to the midnight screen because I said if you have trouble waking up the night, if it's a school night, because it's always a Thursday night, if they have school on Friday, I'm like, I usually make them take a nap in the afternoon, and then I'll take them. My middle child, who's 7 now, I won't take him just because he falls asleep. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to waste the money. I'm not going to pay $6 for a ticket for you if you're going to fall asleep during freaking Marmaduke, you know? And, you know, so I'll take him whenever. I've taken him out of school to go see movies because I'm like, they're going to want to see it anyways. Like I went to go see A-Team. I think I had to take him out of school to go see A-Team or something like that. Because I could go see, there was one where they were showing, I don't think I took him out of school for this, but they didn't show him in Columbus, but in Cleveland they showed Night and Day and Jonah Hex. And so I just took my kids up there and we saw both of them in Cleveland, and it was actually less expensive than to go pay for 3 people to go see both movies in Columbus. So I just paid for gas.
Well, I can definitely say that if I was a kid again and I had the choice of either going to a midnight screening or getting out of school, I would definitely rather get out of school and go see a movie instead of staying up really late in order to just fall asleep during it.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's a toss-up. But, yeah, like I said, I'll take my kids. But I'm not going to take them to see Charlie McLeod.
That's but will just, you take – but so did they see Cats and Dogs or –
Yeah, were, yeah. They oh, were they loved it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, they're 9 and 7, yeah. Man. That's who the movie's made for.
Yeah.
So let's move on to the box office. The from last week, Inception won again.
Awesome.
And which is cool. Yeah. And then it was Salt was number 2. It did well for – I mean, it wasn't a $50 million movie, but, you know, it did well. I think the numbers – it was not a disappointment.
Yeah. I mean, I still haven't seen it, but some of the footage that I showed at Comic-Con makes me – you know, I'm more interested to see it now. It's looked – from what I could tell from the panel and the trailer, Angelina Jolie just seems to do a lot of her own stunts, and that looks cool. I mean, it looks like it's her really, like, jumping around, rolling off of trucks and stuff, so –
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, and the thing is, you forget how good of an actor she really is.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's done some crap. And I mean, and she's done a lot of crap. And some of her crap has been stuff that's either overly pretentious or stuff. Like when she did the Mighty Heart, which I was like, I don't want to see this movie, you know? And I'm like, you're doing a great, fine job acting, but yeah, I don't want to watch this. But you know, the human elements in Salt, she comes across well. She's good on screen. She doesn't always pick the best roles.
Though. Yeah.
Original Sin. Tomb Raider 2. I can just name a lot of movies with her in them. Anything she did between 2001 and 2005. So, but what do you think is going to win? I think Schmuck has a good shot of winning.
I think Inception is probably going to win the box office again.
Really?
Even though I'm interested in seeing Dinner for Schmucks, I would rather pay to see Inception again than go see that for the first time. You know, but I could honestly wait for Dinner for Schmucks for DVD. It doesn't seem like something I need to see on the big screen, but you know, I mean, I would actually rather go see Despicable Me again instead. But
that's a good movie.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I thought it was a really fun and surprisingly fun animated movie for, you know, a lot of the other like sub Pixar animated films that are out there. I thought it held up pretty well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, the only reason I don't think Inception's going to win the third weekend is because even if it just loses 30%, which is a great hold, it would end up being under $30 million, And I think Schmucks is good enough for at least 25 to 30 million. So I really think if Inception wins, it's going to be a squeaker.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like the word of mouth can only last so long for a movie like that. And and I wouldn't be sad to see Dinner for Schmucks up there. I mean, I want to see all of those guys succeed in film. So,
I agree. So, and then I don't think Cats and Dogs is going to be. Although, you know, you can never discount the family audience because we didn't really have a family movie last week.
Yeah. And
last.
Yeah, I mean, this is like the only family movie aside from Despicable Me that's going around right now. So.
Yeah. I mean, Toy Story is still making some money, but it's pretty much played, you know, it's run its course.
Yeah. Most of the kids who have seen it have seen it and, you know, they want to see something else. But.
And it was insane in the press screening.
Yeah.
Here. So, you never know. I mean, it could be one of those things where people are like, because it's like when. Like what Avatar? Do you remember what movie knocked Avatar out of first place?
Something in January, I think.
Dear John. Dear John knocked Avatar. It's like, do you know what knocked Titanic off number one?
Oh, I remember everyone talking about this, but I can't think of it off the top of my head.
Lost in Space.
Oh yeah.
So that doesn't mean anything. And it's like, because, you know, it's like it would have been like, you know, Epic Movie 2 knocks off the greatest movie ever made. So it's going to happen at some point. anything else? Let's move on to talk a little bit about Comic-Con since you went and I didn't because I just don't have the money to go. And the crowds are insane. I just can't deal with
it. Yeah, it gets... I mean, it sells out every year, but it still feels like there are more people coming every year. Somehow they manage to squeeze more people into that little area. And then in the outer lying areas of San Diego and the Gaslamp area, it's so hard to even walk down the streets of San Diego during Comic-Con that, I mean, it's as fun as it is and as much fun as I have going there and walking the floor, meeting all of the people that I've met online through the film community or, you know, just random people in line. As much fun as all that is, it still is such a draining experience to come out of it.
It is exhausting, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just exhausting.
And, you know, you don't see a lot as far as the movie previews go. I mean, you see stuff, but it's like you see a couple minutes of footage here, a trailer there. It's not like going to a film festival where you're watching movies all day, every day, and you're watching the entire movie. It's like you get to see, you know, 9 minutes of Tron 2, or you get to see the trailer for, you know, not Iron Man, but like Captain America and Thor, stuff that they showed this year. I mean, it's all really exciting. It's just, you know, it's just so draining.
Yeah. I remember being, I've been to Comic-Con 4 times. I remember just when I come home, I'm just exhausted. I'm wiped. I'm physically tired. I'm mentally tired. Yeah. And what's funny is I had a lot of people, I've only recently gotten into Twitter. I've been twatting since for a little more than a year. It was in the summer of last year that I actually started doing it. I've only been on Facebook since like last year sometime. So I've gotten to know a lot of people. And so people last year, of course, were asking if I was going. And then this year I've gotten a lot of people, you know, are you going to Fantastic Fest? Are you going? I'm like, I don't have any money. I can't travel. And I got to take care of my kids and my wife works during like Fantastic Fest, which is during the school year. I can't just leave and get a babysitter.
Yeah.
And same thing with Sundance. And then Comic-Con, I'd love to go, but just getting there is expensive. Just existing there is expensive. You know, you can't, you know. And I said I could go and, like, I could cover it for somebody, but I wouldn't want to cover it. If I got there, I just want to hang out with people I know and go drinking and go to parties, and, you know. And you just run nude down the street by the trolley, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, And I just took like a week off of work for this, you know, and that was theoretically my vacation. But I had to make sure that I scheduled an extra day just to like decompress once I got home from, you know, that entire experience. It was nuts.
And what are you doing on that day?
Podcasting with you.
You're recording Fat Guys at the Movies. And aren't you a trooper? I feel so bad.
Oh, no.
I feel guilty. but yeah, I mean, I would love to go to Comic-Con. I'd love to go hang out with the people that I only interact with online and just meet people face to face. It's fun to do. I've done it before a couple times, and I know that I couldn't cover Comic-Con. I just I would just be like, I would resent having to cover it.
Yeah, and like everyone is covering it all at the same time, so nothing is really exclusive anymore when it comes to something like this. Everyone is, you know, tweeting out news as it's happening, and suddenly like everyone's reporting on the same issue. So if you go to any movie blog, it's basically like the same articles over and over and over again.
Well, and so, like, even like going back to the stabbing, which I, not to harp on that. I mean, it's been what how many hundreds of thousands of people have gone through Comic-Con? It's the one incident we've ever had.
Yeah,
so, I mean, it's
that's what everyone's going to talk about now. Oh man, these geeks are so violent.
But what's so funny about that is I learned about that before any major news source did, because people like tweeting out, "Oh my God, somebody just got stabbed!
Yeah.
The police are here!" You know. But It's the thing that bothered me about the coverage that was coming out, and this is not about the coverage, it's about the content, is there was no news. I mean, with the exception of Guillermo del Toro saying he was going to be attached to the Haunted Mansion reboot.
Yeah, that was like the one thing that nobody was really expecting that came out of there.
Yeah. Everything else is like confirmation of stuff that's already been like the big thing, and it was so funny. I was so irritated. You go to like Yahoo News, and they're like 5 days behind all the other reporting, and they're like the announcement of the Avengers, and I'm like, first of all, A, this was announced 3 days ago. Second of all, B, this was already all known. Oh, I mean, if they would have come out and been like, oh, and the director is not Joss Whedon, but it's going to be, you know, Tim Burton, whatever, something.
Oh, God. I would never want to see Tim Burton's Avengers movie. I mean,
so,
they're
in three.
I mean, despite, like, you know, that's the thing also with Comic-Con is last year I feel like there was so much stuff coming out of there, like District 9 and Avatar, and there were so many panels, and, like, having Hayao Miyazaki at Comic-Con, all the stuff that was coming out of there was so exciting, and, you know, having Peter Jackson there for the first year was just amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, this year I wasn't really... There weren't a lot of panels that I was looking forward to. I mean, I'm excited about Tron, but I kind of want to go into that knowing a little less. But, you know, I think some of my favorite moments of Comic-Con are going into those panels that I didn't know anything about and being wowed by them. I mean, this year I got to see when Guillermo del Toro introduced the Don't Be Afraid of the Dark movie that he's producing. I mean, that footage was so scary, and I normally don't like horror movies, but this movie, I mean, it looks absolutely gorgeous. The director, he's doing some really amazing work with color and, like, you know, light and shadow. And
I heard there was some pants wedding going on.
Yeah, I mean, there was a huge jump scare, and being in Hall H, there's 6,500 people. Everybody jumped at the same moment. It was pretty amazing. It was an amazing experience. I can't wait to see that movie. It looks to be really terrifying.
Is it going to live up to the cinematography of the original TV movie?
I think it'll probably do a little bit better than that.
Because I just recently watched that. It was hysterical. I watched it, and I was tweeting about it while I was watching it. I got people pissed off at me because they were like, that's a good movie. Don't make fun of that, you dick. And
oh,
I'm like,
man.
Come on. I think it looks goofy as hell.
I think you'll inevitably piss someone off on Twitter by saying anything about any movie ever.
I piss people off on Twitter all the time.
But yeah,
that's part of my job.
They also showed some footage real quick for Battle Los Angeles. This is like a new kind of like an Independence Day in District 9, or, you know, mm-hmm. I think people have been describing it more like District 9 meets Black Hawk Down, where there's a group of soldiers in the middle of Los Angeles during an alien invasion. And some of the footage that they showed just looks so intense. I mean, I think they were trying to hearken towards more like the Children of Men, like long shot, really like hyper realistic battle scenes. And it looked really intense, and I can't wait to see that movie when it comes out.
Cool. Yeah, I'm interested in seeing these. I'm always interested in seeing the movies, but I've always been like the Thor footage. I'm not. It just recently, and we're recording this on Wednesday night, so we're a little ahead of the game. But the Thor Comic-Con footage just hit the internet like 2 hours ago, and people are like, download it now before it disappears. I have no interest in. I'll see the Thor footage when I watch the theater, because what's funny is I watched the original Tron trailer online because I love Tron.
Mm-hmm.
Watch it, thought it was cool, but then when I saw Alice in Wonderland, they dropped a trailer on that in 3D before Alice in Wonderland, and I was like, I wish that was the first time I saw that trailer. I'm very much, I want to see it projected. If I'm going to see it, I want to see it projected.
Yeah, and the Thor trailer will be out soon enough in theaters. I saw the footage at Comic-Con. I mean, I'm excited about Thor as a character. I don't know how excited I am about the movie. Although, like, the scene that we got to see at Comic-Con with Hugo Weaving, as the Red Skull. I mean, not in Red Skull makeup, but as his like human, you know, pre-Red Skull form. I mean, that stuff looked really cool. I still haven't seen The Wolfman, but I think... different director. Kenneth Branagh is directing Thor.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it looks pretty cool. We'll see how it goes.
I'm looking forward to... I did like getting the news, but yeah, I'd love to go Comic-Con again.
The reason I was thinking Hugo Weaving Red Skull is because there are Thor elements in Captain America, and so they were like showing them back to back, and my brain is Comic-Con fried right now. But that's so there's like some like Norse mythology going on in Captain America with the Red Skull, which looks pretty cool. And then you know right before that they had shown the Thor trailer, and you know the Thor is one of the more like wackier designed characters where it might not look as realistic in the in the other hyper real world of Iron Man where he looks
he looks goofy in the comics. Let's be honest. It'd be like having the Flash with the old Golden Age Flash with the Mercury helmet. There's no way you can make that costume work without making him look a little bit weird.
Yeah, I mean that's definitely the trick that comic book movies have had to overcome over the past 10 years since Blade and X-Men. Like all these comic book movies have tried to avoid the spandex wearing superhero.
Yeah, well, and it's like I was just telling a friend tonight. We were talking about Thor. Now I never read Thor. The only thing I've never even experienced Thor. I mean, I was aware he was a character, but I've never read him. The only thing I've ever watched was when they did Hulk versus. I watched the episode with Hulk versus Thor, and that's it. That is my Norse mythology knowledge. All comes from Stargate. like Asgard. Those are those aliens, you know. So, but when the concept art for Thor came out, it was just. They look like toys, and a lot of people jumped on them. And I said, well, you know what? I just recently watched Clash of the Titans, rewatched that on Blu-ray, and I was watching the deleted scenes. And, you know, regardless of what you think of the movie, Liam Neeson's outfit as Zeus in the movie looks pretty freaking awesome. You know, it's glistening, and it's ripped, and everything. You know, it's cool.
Yeah, they managed. They definitely managed to create a cool-looking armor for his suit.
Yes. And they have an alternate ending of the movie on the Blu-ray, and of course it's all unfinished effects and everything, and he looks awful in it because they haven't done any of the process work on it. So I don't know how much what's in a production still does not necessarily mean what's plays on the big screen, and that's where I'm kind of holding out hope for Thor, because they do look kind of silly.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the Fat Guy Five. We're rolling long on the segment, but that's okay. We're in the infamous middle segment, which can go on forever. In honor of cats and dogs, we're going to go back to the five best talking animal movies or movie series. Because cats and dogs is not one of them. For everybody out there who hates on Alvin and the Chipmunks and Marmaduke, and Beverly Hills Chihuahua, which I like Beverly Hills Chihuahua, and the first Alvin and the Chipmunks, but that's because I have kids. Here are some five, there are five, in no particular order, great talking animal movies. I'm going to start off, I'm actually going to start at the bottom of the list, because I want to save the one on the top as my last one. The first one is The Chronicles of Narnia, because they have talking animals. They have a lion, and they've got the little mouse that talks. They have beavers. I like any movie that's got beavers in it. Especially talking beavers.
I think
that would be
amazing. Yeah, I think talking animal movies, especially the live action stuff, it's so tricky to get a non-human face to speak human, like with a human sounding voice, where having like the lips moving correctly, it just inevitably kind of looks weird. But I think the Chronicles of Narnia did a pretty good job, especially with the beavers. I liked how they were animated. They looked believable.
Yeah. And so that's one of the ones that came to my mind first, because I think with the computer technology you're able to, I mean, going way beyond what was done on Hocus Pocus, they've really perfected the emulation of facial expressions on animals without making them look like cartoons.
Yeah.
So you can take the next one.
All right, so I went ahead and picked the Rescuers, and you know, to some extent, the Rescuers Down Under, just because those movies, growing up as a kid in the '80s, were some of my favorite movies. You know, as far as like talking animals, and when I saw the trailer for Cats and Dogs, it totally reminded me of something, of like a storyline where these animals all exist in a human world, but they kind of live underneath it, and they live, you know, mm-hmm. between the walls, and they have like, you know, all kinds of crazy spy technology. I mean, it's kind of like a you know, like as the title would denote, it's like a rescue movie where they go and try to save this kid. But you know, it's a lot of fun, and I think that the style of animation is like Disney, in at least it's a Disney movie that I look back fondly on. The Rescuers Down Under, I remember, you know, seeing that in the theaters several times, and I still think those movies hold up. I mean, I've shown them to kids, you know, that we've babysat, and they all love these movies.
Yeah, they are good. I like the first one the best. It's, you can't lose with Bob Newhart.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
The next one is the Muppet movies, and I'm just gonna lump them all together, even though some are better than the others. And because you can't have talking animals in a list and not give a nod to the Muppets. They've done some great things. They were the market standard for doing talking animals back in the '80s and even into the '90s. It wasn't until you got the computer technology that they just were like, yeah, we can now, you know, we don't need. Muppets look silly now if you actually try to make them look realistic, except for, I mean, if you saw Hitchhiker's Guide, they use Muppets in that. They look pretty good.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, like, I'm almost going to go against what I just said earlier and say, like, that I like it when the animals look like they're believably speaking, but, you know, the Muppets kind of are the complete opposite of that, where it's clearly, they look clearly fake, but, you know, the voices that come out of them, I mean, the voices that Frank Oz and, you know, that they all gave them sound so good and believable that you forget that you're watching something with a hand up its butt. Like you don't even think about it.
Well, the other thing, it's not just the voices, it's the puppetry. Because if you look at the history of Jim Henson Studios and how he developed it, it was a real artistry to the puppets.
Absolutely.
And it you know it works, because I've seen bad puppet shows, because I got kids. We watch kids shows all the time, and there's a lot of bad content out there. And when you see, if you ever see those rare shots or footage or pictures of the puppeteer working them, it just looks wrong because it's so believable as a living character. Whereas if you were to see somebody with a crappy puppet on there, you know, if you were to watch Ubi, you'd be like, yeah, that's just a hand.
Yeah, and I mean, even to some extent, like watching, you know, and this is kind of like a tangent, but like Yoda in Empire Strikes Back versus Yoda in The Phantom Menace, when he's, you know, CG versus a puppet, like people believe Yoda in Empire Strikes Back, whereas he looks a little off in, you know, and or maybe, no, not in Phantom Menace, but like in the later
Phantom
ones.
Phantom Menace, he was a puppet, still, but it was a crappy puppet.
Yeah, they tried to young him down a little bit, but I think they did a little
We're
going to
make him look really crappy.
But yeah,
he gets better as he gets older.
I think in the second and third one he was CG, and
that is correct.
That was I think people, you know, and they tried really hard to, and I think in the special features for the Attack of the Clones they even talked about going back and trying to recreate you know, like the same movements and stuff that they were all doing on the set in Empire Strikes Back. And it's definitely a mix of the two, like a mix of the voice and the puppetry.
Absolutely. You got the next one.
Yeah, so I was going to talk about just Don Bluth movies in general, specifically films like The Secret of Nim, the American Tale movies, All Dogs Go to Heaven. I mean, Secret of Nim is probably one of the most influential movies on me as a kid, just because it was a movie that was so terrifying as a kid. But, you know, I love the...
It's intense, man.
Yeah,
it is intense.
Absolutely. And I love all of the mythology that it develops in there, with, like, you know, these rats who have this whole, you know, back history, and then, like, you know, the science experiment aspect to it. It's such a scary movie. Like, you know, characters die in it, and, you know, when they die, it's kind of gruesome at parts. You know, they get crushed underneath things and or get stabbed, and it's hard.
Brutally raped and then told there's no Santa Claus.
Oh, man. If that was in that movie, I've definitely blocked that part out.
That was in the second American Tale movie, I think.
Yeah, I mean...
American Tale, Fievel goes to Brooklyn.
I mean, mean, even like All Dogs Go to Heaven is pretty dark. I mean, even just like the concept
itself. The premise is dead.
I mean, like, like the dog devil in hell. I haven't watched that movie in years, but I remember it being pretty scary. Like the whole afterlife aspects to it. But I think those Don Bluth movies, like he manages to instill, real character into all of those animals. Even though they're cartoons, you still feel connected to them. Watching that Cats and Dogs trailer where it's like these CG animals, I didn't get that same connection to them. I didn't feel like, these are individual characters. I felt like they're just, like terrifyingly talking dogs that are being manipulated digitally. But maybe I'm just, old and bitter at this point.
No, you're right. You're right. And then when they use puppets, they look awful in that movie. So, you know what's my favorite Don Bluth thing ever?
What's that?
Dragon's Lair.
Oh, yes.
Dragon's Lair was awesome.
And what is the other one? Space Ace?
Space Ace. Yep. And then they had Dragon's Lair 2. I wish they would have made... Now, he's too old to do it, but if they would have done this in the 90s, it would have been so awesome if they could have done a Dragon's Lair movie with Bruce Campbell as Dirk.
Absolutely.
That would have been perfect.
One of those episodes ended up on one of those Saturday morning cartoon compilations, I think, recently, like the 80s one.
Really?
I'm pretty sure there's an episode of Dragon's Lair on, I think, maybe like the second disc.
Yes, there is. They did a cartoon version.
Right.
Yeah. It was a cheapo Saturday morning cartoon version.
Yep. He has such a distinct style of animation. Like the characters, like you can definitely spot Don Bluth animation, between that and, any other like cartoon house.
Well, you watch the Disney stuff like Fox and the Hound and stuff like that. And you're like, that's Don Bluth. You can just tell.
Yeah.
That he was involved in them. I'll move on. Speaking of people or animals dying in movies, the one I want to highlight is Watership Down. Now, not a lot of people remember this movie, but it was early 80s, maybe late 70s, and it's based on Richard Harris's book. Richard Harris? Did I get his name wrong?
I don't know.
What is it? It's a guy who wrote a book, and it's a story about rabbits.
Richard Adams,
that's what it is. Richard Harris is the actor who yes. died before he can finish playing Dumbledore. That's what he's remembered for. That's what he's going to be remembered for. Richard Adams, it was his book, Watership Down. It's about just sort of like the politics and these rabbits in a clan. And it's a grown-up cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
It is brutally violent at times because the rabbits get in fights with each other. And it deals with very adult themes. But it is a fantastic movie. I haven't seen it in years, but I've grown to appreciate it. When I saw it as an adult versus when I saw it as a kid, it's just a fantastic movie and intense and just a brilliantly, brilliantly done film.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen this movie also in years. And it's this movie and I think Plague Dogs is another one that I think might be from the same author.
Yeah, he wrote Watership Down was one he did that, and then he did Plague Dogs was I think came out after.
Those movies are I like to think that sometimes I think that some movies now are too adult for kids that are being put out for kids, but then I think back to movies like this or Secret of Nim or Watership Down, I'm like, yeah, that's pretty adult for kids. We managed to survive through those, so I think we sometimes maybe want to like protect kids a little too much, but sometimes they should let them see this stuff and they'll grow up quick.
Yeah Let's make them grow up. That's what I have to say. All right. Well, we're way long on this segment. We're going to go to a break, but it was a great segment. And when we come back, we're going to do the DVD roundup.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. And now for the world-famous DVD roundup.
Good job. I always have to prep. When we have a guest host, I always have to prep him for that because it's important. It's important. We send this out to Lucasfilm, to Skywalker Sound, and they modulate my voice to sound precisely like the Indiana Jones whip.
And as a listener of the show, they do an amazing job.
Well, thank you. I always let the guest go first. Let me know what your picks are for DVD.
Awesome. Well, just out this week, just came out this past Tuesday, two animated movies that I have particularly loved came out on DVD and Blu-ray. The first one Batman Under the Red Hood. If you're a fan of the Batman the Animated Series show, which I think a lot of people are, if you haven't ever seen that show and you're interested in like the Batman mythology or the character, that is definitely the place to start. You know, if you really want to get a good glimpse into what Batman is as a character and see him fleshed out through, you know, dozens, like four seasons of episodes, dozens and dozens of episodes, it's a really great show. This new movie Under the Red Hood kind of expands on a storyline that was never really touched on in that series. It gets pretty dark at points, so it's definitely not for the younger kids, but I think that if you're over 12, I think you can appreciate the issues that are brought up in the movie. It kind of deals with what happens to Robin, or one of the three iterations of Robin that have come up in the comic books. They deal with what happened to the second one, and it gets pretty dark at points. You know, it deals with the Joker. It also deals with Batman as a father figure to Robin. The Blu-ray is packed with special features. They include some older episodes that have been picked out by, I believe, Bruce Timm, the writer, producer for these animated shows. Those bonus episodes aren't in high definition, but they're fun to watch if you haven't seen them and you want to get like some more context as far as like what's going on in this episode. They also include a really cool short film of Jonah Hex, which is voiced by Tom Jane, and I haven't seen the new Jonah Hex movie, but I really like this short animated film.
I know, Tom wanted to be Jonah.
Yeah, he did. He even like went and photoshopped his own face, I think, did some like makeup in order to look like him. And you know, it's cool to have him be the voice of Jonah Hex in this. One other quick DVD Blu-ray that I wanted to mention is that G.I. Joe the movie, the classic 1980s
Go Joe.
Exactly. That is now available on Blu-ray and DVD from Shout Factory, and it's a pretty awesome Blu-ray. They include a lot of the really cheesy PSAs that they used to have at the end of it, and then they also have a pretty cool commentary on there. It's fun seeing this. I mean, the Blu-ray looks good. Like the high definition transfer is a pretty good transfer. I highly recommend this. If you're a fan of those movies, if you're a fan of Batman or if you're a fan of G.I. Joe, pick easily adding these to your collection. It won't you won't regret it.
Okay, cool. Do you have any real quick for the Criterion?
Right now, right now is a good time to be a fan of the Criterion Collection. There's a sale going on at Barnes & Noble up until, I believe it ends on the 1st. So if you're listening to this episode on Friday, it will be ending on Sunday. But two Blu-rays that I would highly recommend you picking up if you can get them on sale, or if you can, it's worth paying full price for these. They just recently re-released The Red Shoes and Black Narcissus on Blu-ray. And these two transfers are ones that have been kind of like in the mix, being talked about, being re-released theatrically, but the new transfers of these movies look beautiful. I mean, they really went in and cleaned them up. Some of the special features on the Blu-rays show you exactly how bad the original prints were getting and just how much work they put into it. There's lots of documentaries and stuff. And, sometimes Criterion... Criterion is known for their supplements and their transfers. These movies are just like exemplary works of the Criterion Collection. I think over the next couple months, we're also going to be getting stuff like Black Orpheus, which is supposed to have another amazing Blu-ray transfer. That's coming out in a couple weeks.
Cool. I'm going to throw down mine real quick. We've got Stargate Universe 1.5, which is the second half of the first season. Not a huge Stargate Universe fan, but actually the Blu-rays look really cool. And they got loaded with special features. So if you missed that on Sci-Fi, you can catch up on it. It actually looks better than when it's actually on Sci-Fi. Repo Men with Jude Law and Forest Whitaker. Not a bad little sci-fi grisly horror flick. It's okay. Clash of the Titans. I actually got to give some props to this one because I think the transfer looks really good. It actually looks better. 2D, 3D, I don't care how you saw it in the theater. This isn't bashing the 3D, but it's just it looks better. The color timing's better. And I enjoyed the movie. I know you didn't.
I didn't, but I'm actually really interested to watch this movie on Blu-ray because I didn't like the 3D, and I would rather just see it, without all of that extra, garbage put on top of it. Mm-hmm. I want to just see the movie for what it is. I'm also excited about seeing these, deleted scenes that they've added to it and the alternate ending.
The maximum movie mode that they have that goes through there and everything. Yeah,
I think that there were character moments that were, obviously taken out from the movie. I don't know if this is like a, you know, full director's cut, or maybe we'll see another one later on, but I'm definitely interested in checking this one out.
Great, great. Stinkers, Dog the Bounty Hunter, Crime is on the Run, but we're not even going to spend time on that because we got to get going here. Thanks a lot to Ryan Gallagher from Criterion Cast for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
We'll have you on again sometime, but we got to run, so check them out. We'll have all the contact information on fatguysatthemovies.com.